Thank you for watching Nuclear Nation 2. It's the sequel of this Fukushima refugee stories. As you see in this movie, the evacuation life of these Fukushima people are continuing even today. They are living in temporary housings, and more than 130,000 people out of Fukushima are still living without their houses and without enough compensation to restart their new lives. And because of partially the failure by the government and TEPCO, and partially this is, you know, it's nobody's fault. It's, you know, it's lost. The radiation is still there. Radiation is still leaking from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, and the contaminated water is leaking beneath, below the ground, into the ocean. And nobody's, you know, pretty much everybody's hoping that this is gonna solve someday, but unless the Prime Minister of Japan, Abe, has said it's Fukushima is under control. That's a very famous line he said in Brazil when there was a competition for the Tokyo Olympic 2020, and Japan won it. The Olympics coming for 2020, but I have to say this was the huge lie. The Japanese Prime Minister said it's not under control. Radiation is still leaking. It's going all over the place. And as you saw in the movie, you know, they lost everything. Not only homes, houses, and furniture and the cars and animals, a lot of animals died. But also there are a lot of things invisible, faded away. History, traditions, community. As you saw in the movie, there's a Chinese restaurant in the promenade, and then there's a meat shop. They bought the men, you know, the cutlet they could buy, and there's the sweet shop over there, and there's a promenade there, and they used to hang out there with the friends, and all those tight community people know each other are gone. And some, you know, say, you know, the government, everything government does is trying to compensate by money, but there are a lot of things you cannot compensate by money. For example, there used to be 600 children in Futaba town before March 11. Then after 3 years, last April, finally they opened up the elementary school and middle school and also kindergarten. 3 years after the disaster, and you know how many children came over? Just 11. Just 11 children came over, because right after this accident, people spread all over Japan. There are 47 prefectures in Japan, and out of 47, 39 prefectures, Futaba residents just evacuated to. So majority of the people, they went to this Kisai High School, then they moved into this Iwaki city and into this temporary housings. And this film told about this majority group of the Futaba town. But one thing I have to stress here to you is that it's just a part of it. The whole picture is that they spread all over Japan, and then this tight community of this small town Futaba is really dispersed all over the place. And then, you know, you can imagine how 3 years apart mean to the children. They go to the school, or they go to the new place, and after 3 years, and when you ask children, okay, you want to go back to Futaba High School, you know, Futaba Middle School or Elementary School, they would say no. They want to go to the school they are going now. So that's one example. Its community is gone too. So this film is trying to question that, you know, the cost of nuclear energy, you know, it is beyond, you know, something that the human beings can compensate anyhow. You know, there's no way to, like, we can just fill in what we have lost. So it's really, it's kind of very weird or strange for me to say this way, but you know, Faust, the Goethe's Faust, and it's a Faustian bargain. You know, you just sold your soul to the demon. That's what it feels to me, what Japan has done. You know, like, it's the we realizing how much we lost, and then we didn't realize that until now, and then we are really realizing we gotta do something about it. We have to move away from keep using, you know, nuclear energy. Thank you.
You are all welcome, very welcome, to ask questions or give comments. Just give us a sign that, there's already a question over there in the middle. Please wait for the microphone.
Thank you for this beautiful, I mean, not beautiful, very sad, but still beautiful movie. It's very enlightening. And I'm wondering, these people who move away, we see them in the refugee camps, but we don't know what's happening to them now. Did they manage to settle in a different place? Are they kind of, did they find a new home?
I think, you know, many of you have noticed you didn't see many young people in the movie.
No, almost just old people.
Yes, because it's been almost 4 years now. And when I was filming this one, this was like year two and year three. And then until then, you know, people in 20s, 30s, 40s, who's got energy to restart their lives, just they have moved on. They just moved to the new place and they started a new life. And then the people you see in the movie is the people who cannot move on. So, you know, pretty much like the financially, I think. You know, with the money, and then they can just buy a new house in the new town, then they just moved. But most of them, like, it's, you know, they are not really in a good condition financially, so they stayed in the Kisai High School, the shelter, then the temporary housings. And the temporary, this shelter closed, as you saw in the movie, and they moved to this temporary housings. So there are still many, many people, like around like 1,500 people are still living in, you know, I'm talking about just a Futaba town. You know, when you talk about the entire Japan, it's 130,000 people are still living they're just being away from their homes, and they are living either temporary housings or it's called apartments, subsidized apartment, just the rents are paid by the government. But, you know, one thing very weird and strange is that they, you know, governments are just announcing they extend this lease, special lease, the free rent. It's just every year. So you don't know how long this is going to go. For now, they are saying the rent is going to be free, but they're subsidized until the March 2016, just a year from now. So one year by one year, they are just extended like that way. Government, the official statement by the government says until the 6 year from the accident, meaning 2017, they are not be able to go back to their homes. And when you ask, okay, when can we go home? Then they don't answer you. They don't give you the answers. Then they are contradicting by themselves, because the way they are paying the compensation, you know, it's said like it's a 40%. They are paying just a four, about just one university study, you know, came up and saying, okay, it's just a statistically speaking, the all those compensation money is about 40% of the real value of the properties and the real estates. Then when you ask like why, then why not it's 100% or full, then they say it's because it's based on the assumption that they will return there.
But how can they return it? I mean, how can you decontaminate nature? I don't understand this thinking. Is it just some kind of placebo to give the people the feeling that something is happening, or does it actually help?
Yeah, I have the same question too. I ask them, okay, when can we go back then? They don't answer you. So this is a very, I think this is you can apply this, the characteristic to the other part of the Japanese politics, actually. This is, I think, cultural sickness, I have to say. They tend to postpone the things. They cannot face it. It's same as what happened to the World War II. I think it's unlike Germany, Japan is still denying what they have done during the World War II. I don't know, like it's story of the comfort woman, those sex slaves. The administration right now is, you know, this is the Prime Minister Abe, is trying to deny that, trying to modify the past they have done. And then, you know, it's so, you know, it's very opposite, I think. It's what the Germany did that to the Nazis, Holocaust. You know, Japan is still, there are many, many people, and including politicians, they don't want to look at the past, and they want to deny, and they want to change it.
I would like to know, I mean, maybe not all of you know that the first part was shot right after the accident and was shown here in 2012, and this one is now 3 years later. I would be interested in your work, how you followed those people, how often have you been there, and how much material you gained, and how did you organize it? I mean, your focus is, I think, a little bit different now.
Yes. At the beginning of the filming, when I shot the Nuclear Nation 1, which came here to the Berlinale for the world premiere 2012, I was there almost every day. And this one, like, I went there maybe like once in a week or twice a week. So like maybe like 10 times total in a month. So it's much less. But because of it's, you know, not really many big events happening. It's more like everyday life. That's really stressful too. You know, as you saw in the movie, like people are eating this bento lunchbox every day, the same food and the same meal, and which is very, you know, it's not that great. And as you remember that Takako Umeda, this old lady, just sitting in this art room, first floor art room, and alone all the time because she doesn't have a children or a family. And then, you know, she is one of those Futaba people. Who don't really have a family, so you know, only thing she can do is just relying on this town and then just staying in this high school room. And I've seen many people. She is one of those people, and this nuclear accident revealed that, you know, many those elderly people in Japan were really relied on the community. Even like she was alone in the Futaba town, like the people were helping her to do anything. When, you know, for example, like she went to the hospital, or, you know, she was being helped by her neighbors. And now she's alone, especially after people got kicked out of this shelter. Now like she's currently like she's living in one subsidized apartment in Iwaki City alone. And I make a visit sometimes, like at least once a month. But you know, it's she is kind of feeling, I think, you know, how do I say, you know, not well. I mean, okay, you know, she doesn't really talk to the people. She's alone all the time. Some other elderly start showing this Alzheimer's or the, you know, dementia, because like it's when they were living together, people were like, you could be more energetic because you are surrounded by the people. But now, like you have to live alone and apart from everything, and then many people are really suffering from dementia. And the total amount of the footage I shot for this episode 2 was 400 hours. And out of 400 hours, I put that together to a 2-hour. And the biggest challenge for me was that to depict this internal conflict inside the town. As you saw, like, it's just one guy says, like, oh, they get the more 20,000 yen more than the pub, or they are eating this bento lunchbox every day for free. We are not really, you know, eating the free food here. And so they are start complaining, the criticizing each other within the same community, just because they live apart. Though, you know, I had no idea how to depict these scenes, because this is a problem of, this is a challenge of making a documentary about ongoing disaster. It's not ended, it's still going on. So by making this movie and showing this at the Berlinale or all over the world could harm their life now. So I thought about it through. Then I talked to the people at the Futaba, and I showed this movie to the Futaba people then. And then I kind of came up to this conclusion that it's not really the hatred. It's not that they hate each other, so that's why they are criticizing. It's this disaster, the nuclear disaster, which are really segregating people. And how, if I edit the film to make the people to think about that, then, you know, without really focusing on only this internal conflict, maybe that's the way to, you know, depict this issue, because this internal conflict is the essential for this nuclear refugee stories. You know, it's just because the TEPCO and the government left the people like this way for a long time, people started really getting crazy and being frustrated. So that's the essence of this refugee life. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is there any question? In the middle. Over there, and
I've got millions of questions, actually, and I'm really glad you're here to talk to us about this. And I will focus on two. One thing is there any movement against nuclear power now in Tokyo or anywhere else? Or am I really let down by all of Japan now, as it seems in the movie? And the second is, are you planning to do a third or even more? Like for decades, maybe?
There are many protests and rallies in Japan, especially every Friday. There are a huge group to go into the house of the Prime Minister and the Congress building, and they are doing the rally. And they say, okay, stop the nuclear and we have to move on. And the second question, yes, I'm thinking, like, I'd like to follow this town of Futaba people until first, like, I went right after I started making this movie, I was saying, like, I'm gonna just follow them until when they can return. But I don't think I can follow them while I I'm alive. I think it's I have to ask my grandchildren or something like that to follow through. So now, like I'm saying, like it's I'm gonna just follow the town of Futaba as much as I can until they settle somewhere for forever. I don't think that they can go back for you know some time like while I'm alive. I think at least 30 years. I don't think they can go back. So there's gonna be nuclear nation 3, and there's gonna be nuclear nation 4. So I'd like to ask you to look forward to them.
Thank you.
I have a question regarding the first part of Nuclear Nation. I saw it at Berlinale some years ago. I want to know what was the reception to Nuclear Nation 1 in Japan, and were you happy with the reception?
It was good. There are many people came over to see the movies, and then when you compare to the same size of the documentaries, like especially about the Fukushima, I think this was the one of the the most seen documentaries in Japan about the Fukushima, and also outside of the Japan, actually, this was screened more than 50 countries, and this is the most seen documentary about Fukushima all over the world, actually. But still, I think the majority of Japanese people don't really know about what's going on in Fukushima because they are so indifferent, especially when you go to the west side of Japan. When I show this Nuclear Nation or Nuclear Nation 2 to people, then they were like, oh, I didn't know this is what is still going on now. So it's kind of, challenging the people's forgetfulness. Because, the nuclear waste is there. And even we all die, they're going to be there. In a plutonium, this is a 24,000 half life, and how many times do we have to revive? We resurrect and many times, actually it's gonna be there. So this is a really beyond something a human can catch up and a human can handle and control. So this is really a wake-up call for us to realize that and there are something we cannot really control. This is just electricity. There are many other ways we can produce electricity. We don't really need to stick to it. But somehow, Japanese governments are strained to this structure of nuclear energy because they can make money. For the electricity companies, they have those fuel rods still there, unused. So they want to use them. Then they can just, for them, they can make the electricity for free because they have these fuel rods without thinking about what they can do about these used fuels. I don't know how many of you know, but it's this Prime Minister Abe now, and the Japanese government are saying they want to restart the nuclear reactors in Japan sometime this year. I think it's most likely this June. Yeah. So this system of the nuclear energy is very well thought out, I think. This is the system that really taking advantage of the limit of the human beings, which is that you cannot really feel of the pains of others when it's really far. You know this great thinker, philosopher, the Susan Sontag, I admire a lot. I used to live in New York and I met her a couple of times. And then she wrote the book, it's called Pains of Others. And I really want to apply that thinking to this nuclear energy, because when you the nuclear power plants are really far, and you cannot see it. Even like you are making the people living like Futaba having a huge risk of losing everything when you are using this electricity in Tokyo at the metropolitan area, you don't really feel that. How ignorant is that? And the nuclear energy is the system of like utilizing that.
I just wanted to mention that in this year, 2012, we had four films of the about the catastrophe in Fukushima, mm-hmm. and now, and I think it gets clear in your film, it's all falling into oblivion. I mean, in
yes.
Japan, and also here, more or less.
Yeah.
So this film it is a reminder, definitely.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know. Also something about the way I think you find a perfect way to combine personal, to tell or to show personal stories and destinies and as well which is a touching situation for the viewer, but also the political discussion, you find the combination of this very well. I thought it worked out very well.
Mm.
But I was wondering how you found this, let's say this breathing moment. I especially wanted to mention the last picture when you slowly leave this.
Trucking back shop?
Yes.
Mm.
It's, I mean, how were you planning that? I mean, is this something you think about a thought you want to show and then you look for this picture which is fitting, or how did you plan your shootings?
I'd like to mention that it's just watching my film on this very nice screen is a really refreshing experience, because this projection system it's just a superb, like it's really stunning. This is really number one to me in the world, because I've been to many film festivals with this film, but this and I'd like to thank this projectionist and these technician people, and the sound and the visuals are really stunning, to say first. And I shoot these documentaries by myself. 90% of this footage was shot by only by myself. And I love making pictures, and I love making good compositions, and then making the pictures really beautiful. And then, you know, like you are told, it's kind of a process of me to digest these sceneries of Futaba town mean to the Futaba people while I was shooting a documentary and listen to their stories, because they are away from their home. And I go to the shelter, and every day they say, oh, there's an elementary school there, and we've been there, and we did that, and we did that. Then you ask the other people, oh, there's a Chinese restaurant there, and we did, you know, we hang out there, and you hear all the stories without seeing that for a long time. So you have a high expectation. Then you go there with this white suits and Tyvek suits, and you go there, and you have only 2 hours. And you gotta go, you gotta rush, and you go there, and you see, oh, that's the Chinese restaurant he was talking about, and then you start shooting. And then first I was trying to just have a good picture of just the still shot. Then I start thinking about, you know, this is not enough. I really felt like this emptiness. I want to convey this emptiness, and then I start trying maybe the wide shot or maybe the tracking shot. Then first I stopped moving forward. Then I thought, okay, that's not it. You know, because I feel like it's trying to go in there. But for the Futaba people, it's kind of going away. It, you know, Futaba, it gets really far away little by little. So I start feeling, trying to synchronize what they feel and what this tracking shot feel too. So then that's how I came up with this idea of like, okay, tracking shot is the right way to shoot this community. So it's kind of a combination, like just listening to the people, how they think about their town, then you go there by yourself and find the best way to convey that feeling.
Thank you. Other questions? Oh, there.